Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
That message has to be from La'an. She knows our maintenance schedule. It was beamed right at us.
Still, could be deception. Even a trap.
The Admiral was pretty definitive.
Yeah.
Our former comrade is in trouble. She has indicated aid to her is essential for the safety of the Federation. I will need your help to get the inspectors off the ship and achieve our objective. But I will not ask you to do something you believe is wrong. If you wish to leave, we'll report this plan. I will not stand in your way.
What plan?
I would have thought it obvious. We must steal the Enterprise.
What do you think of cultures, Dan?
I'm for them.
Do you have an opinion about cultures?
Yeah, Dan, do you have an opinion on various cultures?
Man, I don't even have an opinion.
Do you have an opinion about starting this podcast that we do each week?
I already said I'm for culture.
We already did one this
week. Already said that I'm for culture.
We did two.
So you're for culture, but are you for starting the podcast?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, then we will start the podcast.
I am for starting the podcast.
Good.
We
are all in.
Let's go.
I ain't joyful
agreement.
This is a very exciting episode.
I ain't for sure yet.
This is a very exciting episode. It's a very exciting.
I'm excited to start talking about.
As always, to discuss any new Star Trek.
Yeah, especially this show.
Especially
this is a badass
Strange
show.
New Worlds for a variety of reasons that we'll get into. This is the It's Got Star Trek podcast. That's point number one. We gotta always mention the name of the podcast. Mm-hmm. So right in the podcaster handbook.
Oh.
It's right on page 13. I don't know why it's so deep in the handbook. It's like almost at the end.
There's dilly-dallying.
Yes. No dilly-dallying.
Episode 189.
Get straight into it.
Is that right?
Yeah, so it's the It's Got Star Trek podcast. It's episode 189 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast. That's a lot of episodes.
Isn't it funny how we already recorded 190 and 191?
I know. It's the peculiar.
But now we're recording 189.
We're utilizing the recording technology.
It messes with your noggin.
Time. Yes, it messes with my noggin. I'll tell you when
it
I was
knocks
trying
to.
It knocks the noggin. Did Jesse just pull the curtain back?
Pull the curtain back.
I don't think it's much curtain.
Knows.
We announced that we were going to record
it. We said it was both.
All right. Let's clarify.
Okay, fine.
There's going to be a ton of new listeners because there's always a bunch of new listeners.
At least
I'm always
10 million.
Breaking the fourth wall. Baby.
When there's new Star Trek episodes on. Okay.
Pull
so again, we're not dilly dallying. We're just not good at this.
We're warming up. It's warming up.
So this is the It's Got Star Trek
podcast.
It's a cringy podcast.
And on this podcast this week, we will be discussing the season premiere of Star Trek Strange New Worlds Season 2. The premiere episode, episode 1 of Season 2, which is called The
Broken
Circle.
All my contacts in The Broken Circle have vanished.
I did it.
Yes, thank you, Dan. You did do that.
It's the title.
What Jesse was referring to somewhat obliquely a moment ago,
most of
earlier, was that Jesse and I had scheduled long ago a somewhat ill-timed vacation for the next couple
we didn't
of weeks.
Know.
So we are
Paramount.
You didn't think to know.
The Paramount hadn't announced when things would be going on. But regardless. So we are going to
be. You got to live your life.
You do have to live your life.
Famous last words.
And so we will be out of the country and unable to meaningfully.
We're going to Australia.
No, we're not. I wish we were. I wish we were going to Tasmania to go hang out with our friends on the Unplanned Trek podcast.
We're going to Australia.
And 2 Minute Trek.
I love 2 Minute Trek. The last couple episodes. Everyone go check it out. What's great about 2 Minute Trek is, I mean, it's not much of an investment. It's 2 minutes.
You could do it.
Per.
But my time.
No.
Okay, no, we're not going to Australia. We are going
Austria.
We're going to Austria, where there are far fewer kangaroos. It is my understanding than in Australia.
There's mountains.
However,
ice cream.
What we have done is we have recorded two episodes,
yeah,
a two-part discussion
to
in
keep
depth,
the content flowing.
Raucous. Oh, I don't know if it's how raucous it is, but it's a good two fun conversation.
It was rollicking.
No, it was a single conversation broken into two parts. A discussion of Star Trek III: The Search for Spock.
If it wasn't
Did
raucous,
it fly, boy?
If it wasn't raucous, it was rollicking.
It was a good time, and yes, we pre-recorded episodes 190 and 191.
Joel!
And those will be playing.
And yes, I pulled in the curtain back.
But when we return, we will catch up with our coverage of episodes 2 and 3, and then by episode 4, we're going to release episodes 2 and 3 as soon as we can.
It'll be like we never left anymore.
And then we'll get back on schedule.
We were here the whole time.
It's going to be all good.
Don't even worry about it.
Dennis, last words.
We're just wasting time. We're just saying stuff. It's
like, what's going on?
The podcast will be fine.
But for the moment, we are here. We are in country, which happens to be the United States of America.
Oh,
and
so be it.
for better or worse.
For now,
that is what it's called, and for now we are here, and ready to discuss this season premiere. And yeah, Jesse, I agree with you.
Tight, man.
It was an exciting premiere. The reaction has been largely positive. There there are some comments people have. I certainly have some qualms with a couple parts of the episode.
I have two that I can think of. One is more like not real. Like I can kind of be like, whatever. But at the same time, I'm kind of like, well, how did that work? But then there's
we have not discussed this ahead of time. I'm curious to see if we're all thinking the same thing, or at least you and I, Dan.
I'm not implying anything.
Carol Kane is so fucking fantastic.
Yeah, she is.
Really I was good. Not expecting Carol Kane.
I knew she was cast, and I knew that she was going to fill the role at least this season of chief engineer,
and of course she they gave her a role with like some kind of accent involved.
So what I didn't know is
Carol
know
Kane always has to do a funny accent.
Yeah, we had no background information.
She played
on
Simca Gravis and Taxi.
She did.
Yeah, or Miracle Max's wife.
Yes, and in Princess Bride.
She was also in the Kimmy Schmidt.
Yeah,
show.
Yeah.
She was totally
unbreakable. Yeah. Unbreakable.
She played herself.
Kimmy Schmidt.
She played herself.
Carol Kane is a treasure.
Yeah.
But
she's awesome.
What was interesting was I had no idea what direction she was going to go with the character. It appears that they have created a new Star Trek alien they're calling Lanthanites.
Right, but they live on Earth.
That apparently were living secretly style on Earth.
So,
doing some alien business, along with a bunch of other aliens.
I
with great longevity.
They've been living on Earth.
I hope they go into the
Gary Seven aliens.
I hope they go into the timeline of when they started to sort of, you know, because she was saying, telling Spock that she came out to Spock's parents. One of the parents were some of the first people that she outed herself to.
Yes.
If that's how you put
Amanda.
It, outed yourself.
Oh, okay.
Amanda Grayson.
But I want to know the time.
That language very purposely.
I want to know what time they sort of started to like get known that they.
And I imagine that's part of the mystery that will unfold.
That was one of the things where I was like halfway kind of like, I mean, yes, I'm into it.
Okay, that I didn't have any particular issue.
No, see, here's the thing. I was into it. I'm really into it. I think it's kind of awesome. I'm just immediately trying to figure out how that plays into everything that's happened with time travel and stuff like that. Like, so they better really work out.
So do you think she's witnessed all Kirk and other people showing up at various points in time?
How come when nobody went back in time, they never thought to look for the Lanthanites? Obviously, because they didn't have them back then. But it's at the same time, it's just kind of like, it's introducing.
So you mean like, if you're like in Star Trek 4 and you're walking around San Francisco, one potential option would be
double
like,
dumbass on
I'm
you.
I'm going to suss out a Lanthanite.
Right.
And they're
going like
to help me.
Something like that. I don't know.
I can imagine
Lanthanite,
that if
double
they're,
dumbass
if
on
if they're in hiding, maybe that
all
would
I'm
work.
Saying is that
they have funny vampire acts.
You're saying it troubled your existing.
No, let me finish what I'm
foundation
saying.
Foundation
no,
of
no, let
thing.
Me don't guess what I'm saying. I'm telling you
so
what I'm
fun. This is like you know, it's active listening.
I know, but let me at least finish.
It might just be active interrupting.
Yeah.
Okay.
That might be it.
I think so.
That might be it. So no, I was saying when they release the timeline of when they start coming out to Earth and Earth started finding out about them, otherwise it's kind of like,
well, they said 2200s, but that's broad. What that means is what, in the last 67 years,
that
would
have been
something?
The century that they're in,
and right? that's why I think it's weird to introduce.
Well,
that
did they say 22nd century, so it would be like 100 years before, so, maybe.
Oh, 21. That would be 21.
So that's what I'm saying. It's
but we just don't know.
That's what I'm saying. They have to be careful about when they introduce it.
It's broad,
because what you're doing is you're introducing this thread into a quilt or a sweater.
Did you know Jonathan Archer?
I
bet you knew Jonathan Archer.
You're introducing it into this web that's already been weaved, right? You can't just like stick a thread on a woven web and expect it to fit. You have to weave it in there. So that's the problem when you have a web of history behind Star Trek. Yes. Is now you have this new thread that you're sticking in the past. Yes. That you have to somehow account for all the reasons for why they didn't come across them. Like I said, it's not a big deal, and that's why I was like, I can headcanon myself around. It doesn't matter. I don't even remember when they said they were released. It's all fine. I like it. I just think it was a bold move to suddenly have this species that has been existing on Earth this whole time, and the Federation didn't know about it.
I somehow was not really that surprised by it. It seemed like the sort of thing that Strange New World does. They just kind of throw in a bunch of new stuff.
It's a bold move. That's all I'll say. It's a bold move.
I agree. It's a
two
bold
comments.
Bold.
First comment is, Dan, I found your whole weaving metaphor brilliantly evocative. I very much enjoyed you explaining
it. I like it.
That's hard to listen to.
The other thing is I think you and I, we both observed the same thing, which was we had the same feeling of, okay, this is a very bold, I agree, mm-hmm. very interesting development. I just think our reactions were very slightly different. Yours was more on the anxiety side. Mine was more on the, like, oh, I'm really interested to see where they go with this.
I like how you put that anxiety. I mean, that is one.
I don't mean that in the negative. No, could be right at the end. By the end of the season, you could be. It could turn out that it's like, you know what? Dan was right to be worried.
It's funny because it's an appropriate word to use. I wouldn't have used that word, but I can see how that word might apply.
That's why we get together each and every week.
Right.
Well, okay. So first,
thank you.
Somebody's all like I can tell by your accent that you're like a so-and-so.
Yes. Uhura.
She knows her accent.
And then it's real. Later on, it's revealed that they're like some kind of alien. But at first, I was like, well, that's just an Earth accent. Whatever she's doing, it's some kind of funny European accent. Mm-hmm.
It was,
yeah.
It
what are you
like
talking
a
about?
Melding.
It's an alien accent.
There was some like various.
And then they talk about tones. How they were on Earth. And so I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, so that was surprise number one of this episode. Other surprises.
Oh, well, you know what's, you know, we recently talked about Star Trek 3, the movie Star Trek 3. Yeah.
And then the audience will hear that next week.
Where they steal the Enterprise.
Yes.
And this episode of this series, they steal the Enterprise, but it's Spock and Uhura that steal the Enterprise, and they don't steal the Enterprise in Star Trek 3.
Well, and this...
they're not involved.
This story, it's a reference almost more to the Menagerie, when Spock steals Enterprise to go help Pike.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And there's almost like a hint to that, because Admiral April says... When he lets him off the hook,
that's Admiral. Like, oh snap!
Yeah, he's like
Admiral. Oh,
he's
snap.
Like, next time it'll be your commission, and that's what happens. Is when next time Spock steals the Enterprise, they totally try to put him under court martial.
Although when the Admiral at the end, when you know Spock all had the hangover, Spock was like, "Can you please lower your volume?" First of all, don't they have a volume knob on their communication so that he could think he could lower
his
own volume?
He's got those big old ears, man.
That's why he can control his own volume. You'd think, anyways. The Admiral says, he says to Spock, he says. He says, consider that Klingon hangover your punishment. And that's totally what happens in every 90s sitcom where the kid drinks too much and the parents are like, they say, how are you going to punish me? And then the parents, they say,
so you're going to smoke a whole pack of
cigarettes. They're like, the way you feel right now is punishment enough. And so that Admiral is Spock's parents in a 90s sitcom show.
That's how Starfleet admirals are.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not how you punish someone. It's like, oh, you feel shit. That's
punishment. Well, they immediately explained it.
Well, I know. This isn't me complaining. This is just kind of a funny, it's a funny parallel that's being drawn, because yes, they immediately explain that they can't afford shit and then the Gorn, the probable objective identification Gorn attack ship at the end. That was like very dramatically timed. Yeah. He's totally. Like, and he's like, oh, if they only knew. And then on the map it appears, beep, beep, beep. So yeah, that appeared on the screen.
Dramatic license.
Yeah, but no. So
they're setting up the season-long arc.
And as soon as they played that bit at the end, I was like, oh, okay, it's cool. Because at first I was like, they really let that guy off really easily. But then when they explained it, I was like, oh, it's cool. It's cool. There's a reason for it. Because it's the fucking Gorn. So the Gorn is the heavy in this series.
The Gorn. Yeah, and they hinted at that in the last series, or in season one.
You don't want any Klingon trouble, man.
The season one had a lot of the, the Gorn, the hints at stuff going down with the Gorn.
Yeah, Gorn's fucked up.
So that's an ongoing story that will presumably be in the background during this season. So one thing that happens with this episode is it's Una free and Pike free. Now, Una free, okay, mm-hmm. She's in jail. Pike.
Just in the beginning, you see them talking.
You see them briefly. They,
Una.
Yes. They
Una.
Pike's talking to Una.
Una.
And he's trying to help her wiggle out of this little predicament.
Don't start a fight you can't win.
Gotten herself into by lying on her application to start.
You didn't start this.
That's what he says, but she did start this.
I mean, it's the problem is it's always a debate whether...
Let's just say this is not a plum case.
What's the proximate cause for whatever particular events are going mm-hmm. on? So you could debate whether or not she started it or where mm-hmm. the Federation's being heavy-handed.
You can always fall back to, like, they lied on paper or whatever, which is what it's not about. It's not about that, but that's what they can always say.
Yeah, of course, but...
It's about being racist.
Yeah.
I believe... I might have mentioned this last season when we were discussing.
Or specious, I should say, specious.
I think racist is okay in this
Well,
content.
You think so? I don't know.
I think for a contemporary audience listening to this podcast, the definition racist is more appropriate.
The only reason I would think racist would be more appropriate because it's not identifying a species. It's just. Well, it is identifying a species that happens to also believe in genetic modification.
And I think that the...
And so they're always talking about, like, even in Enterprise, they talk about species, yeah. Vulcans are species, humans are species. Yeah. So I think species is, like, the more accurate word.
Sure. I mean,
if you want to sell out so the audience can understand you, that's your choice.
Okay. So Dan's just joking around.
That did fly, boy.
I'm just playing.
He is just playing, as they say.
I'm not implying anything.
I would say he plays too much.
But anyway, the whole point I'm trying to make is that this dilemma is a great... It's a perfect... It's a perfect...
Dilemma.
It's a perfect...
Dilemma.
It's a perfect dilemma for Star Trek.
The dilemma.
Because there are valid arguments... from different perspectives on this particular issue. Now, many people are going to have a very strong opinion one way or the other that they can defend and all that. But it's more interesting when it's not an easy black and white, like super villain, whatever, right? It's just mm-hmm. a more interesting story to see what happens. What we get hints of is that they're referring to some person that Pike is going to go try see because they're calling some person who, for some reason, they think that this particular person would be in a position to actually help Una get out of trouble.
Particular, whenever I use particular in like
particular?
In a document,
particular?
Document software,
sort of identifying as a particle.
Like bits.
When I use the word particular in like Google Docs or Word or whatever, it always gets on my case and it's like, be more concise and always tells me not to use the word particular ever.
It's trying to get you to write for, I think, like a seventh grade audience or something.
Yeah, I know, right.
Which is not necessarily bad when...
It's like, I don't want to be more concise.
But you have to decide which audience are you writing for, and there's sort of like a default that it should be like seventh or eighth grade, something like that. Yeah. That's like the default. Sometimes you go lower, sometimes you go higher.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying for that particular, you're talking about the black and white... racism, speciesism, particular.
No, I said there was a person.
Oh, person. That's
remember,
what you're saying. Yes.
I'm just trying to get through this Pike business, right? So,
okay.
So it's just funny because it's the Captain Pike show, but it isn't necessarily. They've got all these great characters.
It's the Spock show.
That they can afford. I guess ultimately this is a long-winded way of getting around to the
Chapel
point
show.
That I thought this was a very successful episode despite the fact that Captain Pike was sidelined during the entirety of the episode, basically, except for this little part of the beginning where there's this intriguing hint to some magic person who's going to be able to help out. That makes us think, is it somebody we know? Or is it an alien type we know? Or like, what's the deal? What are we presumably going to find out next week?
Maybe it's the lawyer Cogley.
Yeah.
From TOS. Could be,
yes.
That could would be awesome.
That would be awesome.
Maybe it's Cogley's ex-wife.
Yeah.
That'd be even more awesome. But regardless,
Muriel Cogley.
They said that Captain Pike and Una have both commented on the fact that they had been trying to get in contact with this person and they were not getting a response. So Captain Pike is going on his little trip. Charles tripped up with a third.
Ah.
He's
Cam.
To Paul. Captain Pike is going on this trip in order to find this person and get them to join the effort to help.
Where would I stay?
I don't know. I'm sure there's hotels along the way. Or you can
Your
just sleep
mom's
in
house, huh?
You can just sleep in the shuttlecraft.
I don't get it.
So Pike is just, we don't see Pike again this episode, right? He's not at the end or anything, right? So like that's it.
Yeah.
So that's the Pike bit.
The rest
of it is all Spockiness.
It's all Spock being nervous about being a captain.
Yeah.
Awesome. And he's nervous for a specific reason. I don't think he's generically nervous. I think he's nervous only since he had this issue where when he was fighting the Gorn, which they reminded us about conveniently in the previously on Star Trek Strange New Worlds, that he let all his emotions out and he has had trouble bottling them back up. It's similar to the plot, you know, in Ghostbusters when they let all the ghosts out.
They put them back in the containment unit.
Yes, they have difficulty getting them all back into the containment units.
Yeah, that's
because of the EPA. Because in the 1980s, the EPA was a fucking villain.
Yeah.
And a bunch of assholes with a nuclear reactor.
I never thought about
hunting
that.
Hunting ghosts.
I never
are
thought
the
about
heroes
that.
Of the movie.
I never thought
Some
about
sort
that.
Of
the EPA.
Reagan Knight libertarian fever dream.
I know, right?
Yeah, it was M'Banga that told Spock that he removed all his emotional blocks in order to fight the Gorn. That made me think of is it's like there were these big hunks of wood in his head and he just took them out and like
man,
you said
you
like
all of you had these excellent crazy analogies
and M'Banga says,
and all of his emotions came spilling out much like the ghosts in Ghostbusters.
Yeah,
so I don't know, it seems like that seems like a weird sort of thing. I mean, I guess you could say it's kind of like if you weren't if you were trying to eat less or if you weren't trying to quit drinking or do something and then you were doing so great or you work out every day and then you miss that one day and then it opens up the floodgates and you never go back to the gym again. Maybe it's like that where it's like he was so good. It's hard to bring himself back into the routine, but he'll feel so much better if he just does it.
I thought it was interesting. M'Banga actually mentions that, the Vulcan emotions are so much stronger than humans. I think that's the first time anybody actually said that, you know, it's always about how the Vulcans can control their emotions,
about in the past how they had were even more violent than humans.
And then they
got it all sorted out.
Right.
So like,
but
they're
then
like, whatever.
But he's right. They've never actually flat out, at least that I can recall, flat out said like Vulcans' emotions. I mean,
it's always about how like Vulcans are like humans are so emotional.
Right. Like, and it's implied obviously that their emotions are stronger by virtue of the fact that in the past, like they had emotions and had to bottle them up.
I think they might have stated that right. I can't remember.
You might be right.
I'm going to do? I'm going to put down the counter for, I think they've stated it outright. You guys have put down counters for, you think that they've, Jesse's just like, they haven't fucking mentioned it at all. Dan is like, they've implied it strongly. I'm going to put, no, this way we've covered all our bases so that everyone can get mad.
I mean, they may have said stuff, but I mean,
these guys are so stupid.
They haven't said it exactly that way before.
These guys have clearly never watched Star Trek.
But on the good part about that is that we can come back with like, listen to it. We did say that.
It's got hedging bets.
Yeah, there you go.
the whole emotion stuff with Spock, I think, is very nicely done. I think excellently portrayed by Ethan Peck. He's doing, in my opinion, a really good job of it. It's always...
You don't die.
It's tricky because... You know, you love these characters, and as a character like Spock and an actor like Leonard Nimoy, mm-hmm. who
thank you
portrayed that character for so long and created the character, it's always going to be different when some other actor is playing the character, and they're going to come at it with their own vibe, right? And I think Ethan Peck is doing excellent. It's a different Spock, but that's kind of cool because this is pre-TOS. We know he's had sort of emotional issues here and there. That's just in the lore. And then they have this opportunity, which they're taking advantage of, so far so good, of sprinkling in some little retroactive things that help fill out the character of Spock, like his his frequent playing of the Vulcan lute thing.
Yeah. This was like the origin.
Exactly. They provide an origin and they say it was for therapy. It was a therapeutic thing.
That was really something. I was digging that.
And I enjoyed the music too. I hope we hear more. I hope they let him strum on it a little bit more. And if anybody out there in the audience knows if there's a purveyor of high quality Vulcan lutes, but in the real world, we may be interested.
I bet you somebody's purchasing such a thing.
Do you think it's
I want to purchase such a thing?
Do you think it's a lute, or do you think it's more of a lyre?
I believe it is called the Vulcan lyre.
I think it might technically be a lyre.
If we want to be actual canon, I think it's called a Vulcan
lyre. I think lyres have frets.
I don't speak. I don't think lyres have instruments.
I don't think lyres have frets, but I believe it's called a Vulcan lyre.
I think lyres have frets.
Does this one have frets?
A lute has a fret. But
no,
lutes do not have frets. Yeah, it does.
No, are you
lyre
sure?
doesn't. Lyre is like a harp. It's a funny harp. A lute is like a funny.
Yeah, a lyre doesn't have a back usually though.
Yeah,
does it?
Yeah, there's no. Yeah,
but
exactly.
A lute can have a
precisely.
Back.
Yeah, lute. So this looks like a lute. A fingerboard like a guitar.
So they call it a Vulcan lyre.
According to,
but it looks like a lute.
Okay, this not to say that these guys are the experts, but according to merelymusic.com,
merely music,
yeah,
merely music, merelysneezy.com,
yeah,
Mr. All you have to do is get into an in-depth conversation about the difference between a lyre and a lute, and it just sets Jesse's allergies off.
So according to
obsolete instruments. It's got obsolete.
According to merelymusic.com, which I am not stating as an expert, are you kidding me?
I am not kidding you.
Every time... And I'm not mad. I'm just like, I'm amazed.
Sneezing to distract people from the fact that he just insulted all the lutists and lyrists by declaring them to have obsolete instruments.
Jesus.
This is great. Welcome, new listeners, to the It's Got Star Trek podcast, where we get you.
How many sneezes was that? It was like 10 everything. Sneezes?
I don't know. Play back the tape.
Mr. Pepinose.
Okay, according to merelymusic.com, which I am not stating as an authority, but okay, can we cut that out, please? Thank you.
The audience next week gets to hear Jesse clicking on a pen for significant bulk of the conversation. For some reason, I'm not entirely clear.
It says lyres have a fretted neck while lutes do not.
Yeah.
And that's what I said, lyres have...
No, that doesn't make any sense.
That's what
lutes
it says.
Have a fretted neck.
Okay, I believe you.
A lyre doesn't have a neck.
All right, how about this? How about we settle this?
Are we going to take a break?
No, we're just going to lay this down for the moment.
And actually get back to talking about Star Trek.
I'm
sorry.
I mean, no, it's important because I do want us to have some degree of accuracy.
That sounds silly. What are your sources?
MerelyMusic.com.
I only said it like 5 times. Oh, yeah, I forgot. You were busy like sneezing your brains out.
Yeah, man. I have problems.
I'm not trying to...
There's molds and pollen.
Okay, now I'm not saying that Merely Music is right, but that's just what they say.
All right.
And they have a website.
And they're at the top of the Google.
From the top of Google search.
Okay.
You didn't ask ChatGPT,
but
though.
Honestly,
who am I to say?
Honestly, Jesse, you might be right, because the pictures they show of a lute versus a lyre doesn't look like it has any room for frets. So I don't know if they got... It might be a typo. Maybe they got it backwards, because they show an image.
A lyre is an ancient instrument.
And what they're showing is a lyre looks kind of like harpish, whereas a lute looks like guitarish, which I knew. So why... I don't even see where there'd be room for frets on a lyre.
There's no neck.
And given the image that they show, they're still saying... Lyres have frets.
That's what's so mad.
I think it's a typo. I think you're right. I think maybe it is more of a Vulcan lute
or perhaps it's a translation error.
Could be.
All right.
You know what though? It has qualities of both. So which is it? Is it a lute or a lyre?
Wait, are you talking about Spock's business?
Yeah, Spock's business.
It's mostly lyre.
I think it's lute. It doesn't. It has a back.
I think we need to do a.
It's got like a speaker.
I think we need to do a pole.
Yeah.
We need a pole.
It's a funny future instrument, like hybrid kind of funny.
I'm down. I mean, I'm.
It's I.
I'm somebody who thinks we got to start getting away from labels.
I think we got to get away from all these labels.
It causes so much
that's
trouble.
Exactly right.
We're dividing ourselves.
We don't need to be labely. It's a cool instrument.
Let's just all roll around and have a good time.
And this is like a cool like sort of origin story as to how did Spock get his Vulcan instrument?
How did he even do that? It's totally crazy. I do like the recordings though.
Yeah.
But yes, okay. After all is said and done, I think we can all agree that it's pretty rad that they set down this little bit of lore, which colors the perception we might have down the line of seeing Spock playing his whatever we want to fucking call it, whatever instrument this is, playing it at various times in the future.
Interestingly enough, later on in the scene, when he's playing a lyre separately from the, or lute, separately than when he got it, the closed captioning says, plays chords out of tune, is what it says. But listen to this. That doesn't sound out of tune to me.
Only the first. If you play it again, at the very beginning, hidden under the music, there is one out of tune chord, but then it immediately turns into lovely plucking music. Play it again.
I think I might have been mistaking that for like.
It's just percussive.
Yeah,
I think
it's not the music.
I was mistaking it for the soundtrack or the sound effects, but it was actually meant to be the lyre.
But then he fixed it.
Okay.
Because he knows what he's doing.
I'll go with that.
But it's first, it's like, yes, all Vulcans study music because of it. For the mathematical properties. But then he's like, I have no words for what I'm feeling. And then you see him like playing. He's playing that instrument. And like,
Vulcans cannot lie.
Yeah, but we know that's not true. Mm-hmm. I was a little aggravated that they were pushing that.
What? But even the Klingon captain was all like, I don't buy into those legends. Yeah, I don't fucking you.
And you know, with Spock, of course, it's a subterfuge. You can always say, of course, he's exaggerating to help win the game. What's Carol Kane's character's name? Pelia. Commander Pelia. Very cool Commander Pelia.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
But she was all like, oh, Vulcans don't lie. I was like, yeah, I don't know. If you have experience with Vulcans.
He's only half Vulcan.
You would know that they can totally lie. Lying's not a binary thing anyway.
I like the cadence of this delivery she gives.
Thank you for getting me out of the academy.
Yes.
I just like the way she talks.
Yeah.
I like the way she talks.
Thank you for getting me out of the academy.
All right. How about we take a break?
Oh.
It's about that time on the old clock.
I think it's needed.
On the old clockometer.
Yes.
The old chronometer.
31.
The chronometer.
31 minutes.
The traditional chronometer.
I call it a clock.
Some people call it a something. I call it a sling blade. What is it?
Some people call it a Kaiser blade.
Oh, that's
Kaiser
right.
blade. Yeah. All right.
It's like, what are you talking about?
He puts mustard on his biscuits.
Biscuits and mustard.
And you put mustard on a Kaiser roll, but he doesn't call the sling blade a Kaiser blade.
He doesn't call it a biscuit blade. Right,
so biscuit blade. I call it a biscuit blade.
That's been...
biscuit blade.
I could have a winger, too.
That's been sling blade. And this will be a brief break. And after that break, we will return. Be right back. All right, we're back. We're back and ready to discuss more of Star Trek Strange New World Season 2, Episode 1, The Broken Circle. Not to be confused with the three-part Season 2 opener of Deep Space Nine, The Circle. Which is about the circle, not
something
the broken
different.
Circle. It was about a different extremist organization.
Yeah. That's
like a three-part episode.
Yeah, I think Star Trek's first three-part episode. Certainly, if you don't count, it was more official than Best of Both Worlds 1-2, followed by Family.
1-2, followed by Shu. I noticed in this episode there were three wacky camera shots. There were three wacky camera shots.
I remember the spin around time camera
yeah,
shot.
Yeah, there was two spin around times.
Spin around time camera shot.
So the first one was the zoom down shot of space dock from the very beginning. And then the
That was really fun.
That was cool. So it zooms downward.
With the little spaceships.
We'll just call it down because you know what we mean by down.
Ventrally,
even though it's space.
Laterally. Dorsally.
So we're just going to say it zoomed down, and then it went to the Enterprise. And if you notice, when the Enterprise left space dock, it turned 90 degrees back up again. So it zoomed up the way the camera came from the...
Because it's all 3D, baby.
It's all 3D. So
it's all sorts of 3D
and it's
in
not,
space.
And it's not often that...
Plenty of 3D.
And it's not often you see that they do stuff like that in space. They often don't.
They've been doing more of that in modern Star Trek.
Well,
although
cool.
Deep Space Nine did a little of that, but it was still roughly... There was still a constraint. They didn't do like the full sphere action.
I was really into when the new Battlestar Galactica. It's funny saying new, but
the Vipers.
Well, yeah, how they steered around based upon inertia and stuff like that. They didn't just take corners. They drifted in different directions.
I like
which
that
makes
too.
More sense.
It was like playing asteroids.
Yeah, it totally. Was like playing asteroids. Yeah. It's good.
Which leads me to believe I would not be a good Battlestar Galactica Viper pilot.
Nah. I suck at asteroids too. Then the second camera was for some reason when they escaped from the Klingons through the floor. I don't know why the camera turned upside down because it just turned right side up again. It would make sense.
I thought
sense.
It was a gravity thing.
No, I thought so too. That's what I thought they were going for too, because that would have made sense if it was a gravity thing, if they were suddenly on the ceiling from the floor, but they were just...
Oh, there was no gravity?
They just dropped through the floor.
They just dropped. That was my perception, man. Too. I was confused because, I watched the episode a few times, and
both
of those
once.
Times I was like, I guess this is just a flourish.
Yeah, right.
Which is fine. Sometimes you're like,
But I mean, there was no reason
for it. Well, that's
kind
of lame.
That's the problem.
There's no reason for that.
So for the third one, when Ortegas was doing a roll away from those torpedoes,
really?
That the Discovery style ship, the Crossfield class ship,
the pseudo not quite Discovery style, and that's a whole thing on the internet.
I was wondering,
there's a whole fucking
on
the internet.
Why didn't that ship just mycelial
this
away?
I didn't think
it looked that
people,
Discovery like.
Okay,
why didn't the ship just mycelial away? Because it's a Discovery.
Well,
ship.
Well, have you concluded the basic bulk of your point? Because it is worth talking about this whole Crossfield
class
business.
Well, okay, one last sentence about it or two is when they rolled away from the torpedoes. That was similar to when they fell through the floor, except there was more of a reason for it on the third one because they were actually spinning, so it like made sense. But when they went through the floor, I could not think of one reason why they did that other than it kind of looked neat, you know.
It did look neat. It was disorienting.
Yeah.
But it was some sort of flashy flare.
Yeah, but you could call the one when they were rolling away from the torpedoes a flashy flare, but that's a flashy flare that made sense because it was applicable. Applicable.
Yeah.
Applicable.
I think both pronunciations are fine.
Pronunciations. Pronunciations. I call them pronunciations.
Okay.
Put the wrong
absolutely correct.
So.
Syllable.
The internet.
What'd you say, Jesse?
The internet.
What did I say?
Absolutely correct.
He's
Karuk?
Just talking nonsense, Dan. Don't
worry about it.
Don't encourage him.
Don't worry about it.
Don't encourage him.
The Crossfield class. So, Jenna Mitchell. Is she an ensign? I believe she's, or and I can't remember. I think she's... And so I want to get her rank right because I think they're elevating this character a little bit. She was in, I believe, 5 episodes of season 1, but she's given more to do here.
That's the other person on the bridge. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Word.
Okay. So Jenna Mitchell is the name of the character. And she refers to it, right? I think it was her who identified it as a Crossfield class.
She did.
And this has caused a bit of a...
A kerfuffle?
A kerfuffle? A bit of a kerfuffle, because...
Who says kerfuffle?
Crossfield class is like the Discovery or the... What was the Discovery sister ship? Was like the Glenn, maybe? Something like that? Because, they had two ships that they were doing the whole spore drive shit, and then the Glenn got all... It made all the twisty horror people.
Yeah, that's right.
They got squanched or whatever.
It was that dude's friend, was squinched. On that ship.
Yeah, precisely. Stamets's friend.
Stamets, yeah.
So that's the Crossfield. This was clearly not that, although it did have the same bridge, or not bridge, it had the same saucer section.
Inner saucer disc.
That looked Crossfield-ish.
And so I kept wanting it to spin around like the mycelial drive. Obviously, they didn't have a mycelial drive, but like I kept wanting it to spin. How did they retrofit that? Now, those Crossfield ships, would they have the inner disc?
Well, they only built two as far as we know, and they're both gone.
Could they both spin their center saucer around?
Both of those could. Now, it could be that they were modified Crossfield.
That's the only reason you'd make an inner disc is if you wanted to spin around.
Again, I'm trying to get around this.
Or make like a dumbwaiter.
This is
one of
those complex moving parts type arguments that's going on in the Star Trek fan community.
Yeah, I mean, it moves
us
around in a circle.
If you listen to this podcast... At some point in the future, this is going to be more of a historical artifact because people will have long since settled this debate and the sides will have been drawn more clearly.
What is the debate?
No, the moving parts...
who will eventually get there?
The moving parts... Like, could you imagine how many moving parts it takes to spin that inner disc around? Like,
dude,
literally?
Not only could I have.
I have
on multiple occasions since 2017.
They need some serious inertial dampers to, like, pull that off.
Okay.
Or perhaps dampeners.
I see where you were going with that. That's clever. I'll give you that.
I'd say so. Yeah.
Okay, so here's the debate. The issue is that there are some people who are critiquing this, saying that this is an error because they're
error.
Saying that's clearly not a Crossfield class ship because it's not built properly, right? So some people are just saying it's just a writing error. Other people are saying no, it's not a writing error. It's that they've kitbashed a ship. They've put together different pieces of different ships in order to create this monstrosity.
Oh, the Klingons did.
The Klingons, and they said they were Federation people too. This is like Cabal, the Star Trek Six style Cabal, right? And so the idea is that the defense of the show saying it's not an error is that this is it's got part of a Crossfield bit on it, and maybe the transmitter, right? The thing that transmits the ID, maybe that was ripped out of a Crossfield class ship. Now, to further complicate the argument, there are many people, and I believe Memory Alpha might even say this, who say there were only ever two Crossfield ships, Discovery and the Glenn. Okay, I don't buy that because it's called a Crossfield class. So presumably, there's probably a USS Crossfield somewhere.
One other ship.
Even if it's not still in service.
It's got to be at least three.
Anyway, that's just a recount in brief that there are some people who are squirrely about this particular very minor line in the show, which I think is very easily explained away again by it's a kitbash thing by some extremist group. And it's got.
But there's always the question of what did the writers mean and how much does that matter? You know?
It's a TV show in the end of the day.
I mean, that's always like what you kind of say. That's like the default answer when you don't know what else to say.
I guess my default would be on the one hand, I respect and support everyone's rights and enjoyment of minutiae and semantics. I do as well myself. I do enjoy them. On the other hand, it's also like it's funny when there's a lot of fucking lines on Reddit
that are not
talking about this very small portion of a really interesting episode, right?
Yeah.
For better or worse, there's a lot of interesting stuff happening in this episode.
Yeah, I agree. It's got a Crossfield looking saucer, at least part of it or whatever. Now, would you consider that an Easter egg? But it's interesting because can you have an Easter egg that represents your own contemporary show, like the running parallel?
I think it's just a reference.
It's just a reference at that point.
I think for an Easter egg, like a reference is, an audience's reaction to the reference is going to be like, an audience's reaction to an Easter egg is going to be like,
it's a little more titillating.
Something along those lines.
Do that again.
It's dependent on the person. I'm not trying to sort of box people into certain you can jump around, you can just jump up and down like crazy. You're like, oh my god, look at that. More of an Easter egg, although I don't, again, debatable. The Klingon cups, the blood wine cups that they're drinking out of, they look exactly the same as the blood wine cups on Deep Space Nine I think used after Deep Space Nine as well. But Deep Space Nine sort of introduced this like Klingon style, like with the ribs, like a ribbed, and it looks like a pewter sort of medieval future cup. And they're always
drink blood wine.
Slurping blood.
The bloodline.
Bloodline.
It looks like blood.
Isn't that funny?
It's weird.
I thought that was funny too.
It was coating it with the viscosity of blood when you looked at the inner.
It was like they were drinking blood.
It didn't even just have the same color. It looked like a similar like consistency as blood.
And it gave her
popsicle mouth too when she drank it or whatever.
Kool-Aid
mouth.
It's like wine. It's like what happens when you drink wine. Yeah, your mouth gets all
especially
red.
Like blood wine.
Especially blood wine. Especially just when you drink blood.
They've always been coy about what blood wine is made out of, but I'm positive.
It's blood.
There's no blood in blood wine.
No.
They call it blood wine because it has the consistency of
blood. That's what I was
blood.
Saying. I
it's
wasn't...
probably copier. Do they How just copy
coppery? Is it just some like it's really nasty, coppery. Nasty fruit they have?
I bet it's all thirsty. I'm like, my mouth is watering now, dreaming of drinking some blood wine.
I never said that like it was actually made of blood.
Nor did I ever say that you said that.
I'm hesitant to play that one because it's so gross, that fucking belch.
It's fun. It's fun gross, though.
It is kind of fun.
What
I
if
guess.
It's like worm juice?
The, so gross. The scene, of course.
Worm juice?
The scene
you're talking about lime juice.
Lime juice.
Lime juice, yeah.
The scene where we are introduced to La'an in the middle of a drinking contest is of course, evocative of the scene in Indiana Jones, or... I should say, in Raiders of the Lost Ark, not Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. No. The movie is Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, no.
in that film, we see Ravensworth having a drinking contest and winning some money and stuff and demonstrating that she's all super awesome. La'an is doing much the same here, although she has a specific purpose. She's
way more awesome.
She's attempting to ingratiate herself with this extremist group, the Broken Circle. We learn through the course of the episode, I guess the idea is that she's posing as somebody selling Federation weapons so that she can find out more about this business. Yes.
I found the Klingon. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Did you like the Klingons?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
What did you think of the Klingons?
Klingons. Klingon. The Klingons.
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 Klingon.
Klingon.
Klingons.
The Klingons.
Klingon.
Klingons.
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 Klingons around Uranus.
Klingon.
Klingons.
Klingons.
Klingon.
The Klingons.
Klingon.
Klingon.
Klingons around Uranus.
Klingons.
Klingons.
Klingon.
The Klingons.
Klingon bastard. You killed my son.
The Klingons.
You Klingon bastard.
Klingons.
You've killed my son.
The Klingons.
Mocked
the Klingons.
Off.
We finally
Kapla.
Have.
Totally finally have something.
Have some Klingons.
Oh, yes. It's been a long drought
of
Klingons.
They look more like they grew their hair out.
They have
they
evolved.
They got funnier.
They have evolved the
regular,
Klingons.
They
but
got regular stuff.
In a good way, they went back to like cool Klingon style. But I think they improved.
Yeah, it's still a little different.
They improved over the
Klingon passage. You killed my son.
They've improved over the. You have.
Klingon
it's good.
Passage of-
It's
Kill
good that
son.
Star Trek 3, you'll listen to our conversation next week. Star Trek 3 has really good grammar.
Yeah.
That's one of the things we observed in Star Trek 3 is there's a tremendous high level quality of grammar. Unlike this podcast.
Absolutely, sir.
Space junk.
Yes, but the Klingons are, they've done that thing where they're giving them each very different makeup appliances, different hair, different costumes, different forehead ridges, different teeth, right? Mm-hmm. So they're all Klingon, but they've got so much variety. They look a little less generic than would often happen on TNG, Deep Space Nine, et cetera, where there was sort of like a specific Klingon vibe with, and they had variations. I don't want to insult the Michael Westmore and his team. They did a great job. But to me, something felt more alive about these Klingons.
Also, I felt they looked a little less rough around the edges. Like, I don't know.
They look more TOS style.
These Klingons, I agree with what you say, but it does kind of feel like the TNG, DS9, like those era of Klingons could kick these Klingons' asses.
Well, yeah, I mean,
especially one of my other sort of questions about this episode was the whole they can get their ass kicked.
Well, why don't we just go ahead and talk about that? Is there more about the Klingon stuff you wanted to
talk about? Well, there was that one Klingon who was wheeling and dealing with Lon. You're talking about like ridges, right?
Yes.
And his ridges were
prodigious.
He had like
prodigious.
He had clean. He had ridges going from the front of his forehead to like the lower end of.
And
back
he had
of
his
scalp.
Hair all awesomely braided.
Yeah, that so was pretty, he had pretty wicked. He had. There were lots of different types of not just the way the ridges.
Do
were
you think that gal he was with was his sister or like his lover or what was their relationship? I couldn't tell.
I don't know, man. I don't know. You
I guess they
know
just didn't give us enough information.
Not enough information to figure that out. Yeah. You know what I mean? But I was just saying to say the ridges, like you were saying, they gave him more variety, but they also, like I said, that guy's extended way back, and maybe
some people have more plate style ridges. Mm-hmm. You know, plate like section plates. It's like, hey, welcome to It's Got Phrenology.
Yeah,
Klingon phrenology. It's a whole new thing. On the right wing side of Star Trek, Star Trek fandom.
When the
Klingons with more ridges are more intelligent.
The sister slash lover.
That's science.
Are you talking about this one?
No, I'm talking about
the racist.
We need
to bust up your plans, but we could use your services.
This one?
No.
We need to bust up your
but
plans,
she's awesome
but
too.
We could use your services.
That's a different one.
I was talking about the Klingon that remember she put some money down in front of La'an, and La'an's like, I don't want this.
Oh,
you know what I want.
Her, yeah.
And
okay.
then she had to help that guy.
This one,
I hate to bust up your plans.
Like, there's only one other time that I can think of that they said,
bust up.
I busted him up.
Yes. Yes, Data, you did.
I busted him up.
That's the only other time in Star Trek.
I hate to bust up your plans.
Which one? I busted him up.
That was in, What was that?
That was in Stratagemum. The Stratagemum?
Yeah.
Stratagemum?
Yeah.
What? Is that what it's called? I feel like I'm pronouncing it wrong. Stratagem.
Stratagem. With the wiggly fingers.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
In Peak Performance was the name of the episode of TNG that we are referencing.
Peak Performance, yes.
Commander Data, or Lieutenant Commander, whatever rank he was at the time. He busted him up.
I busted him up.
We didn't discuss Peak Performance, have we?
No.
I don't think so, no.
But
I,
we,
I
but,
do not
but
think
you
so,
have a recording no. from it, and
I busted him up.
It sounds funny.
Yeah, but we have not discussed.
We should do that episode.
This is a comedy podcast. Sounds funny.
They've got some stereotypical like gaming nerd or something like in that strat, which I belong to that group of people.
Stratagema.
I belong, so I'm not saying nothing about gaming nerds.
Sounds like you are.
I'm a gaming nerd.
He doth protest much. Oh, by the way, again, another enticement to our discussion of Star Trek III. We do have a brief diversion into a discussion of the old video game Sopwith.
Mm.
Oh, no.
And its inferior sequel.
So if you want to know what the fuck we're talking about, look up Sopwith on the internet before, before you...
Klingons. Any other Klingon stuff?
No.
Any other Klingon?
Except for the ones around your anus. Did we say that joke yet?
I did earlier. Oh. Nobody caught it because you were talking about something else. Oh.
Jesse's always sneaking in jokes.
Oh, I said it all like under my breath.
One of the joys. One of the...
I was going wrong.
One of the joys of this podcast, of editing this podcast, is hearing all the jokes I didn't hear Jesse make.
Yeah.
Where he's just sort of mumbling in the background.
That's funny.
Motherfuckers. Bastard motherfuckers. All right. So Klingon stuff is over. Yes, let's talk about the fight scene.
Oh, man.
The fight scene with Dr. Benga.
Yeah. And they took some kind of super drugs.
Because this has been another bone of contention by some of the fans.
There were a couple bones of contention, I think, in that whole fight situation.
Well, I'm just saying the fight, this fight.
Too specifically, I can
this
think of.
Fight, this was an issue. Now, I will say very briefly what my view of the fight is. My view is, I have no problem in principle with the idea of taking a magic super drug that makes you win fights and get super strong for a brief period of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That I'm totally. Cool with. We've seen that before in all sorts of media. I think that's very cool. However, if you're going to have the magic super drug, there's supposed to be a cost to it. There's got to be like a drawback, like you get like horrible broken bones,
right.
or
yeah, that's
something
true.
Else like that. Yeah. And I think that was one thing lacking here is they had magic super drug, and then they got to do all this fighting and kicking ass,
and then they survived like vacuum.
And it all seemed to like there was no like negative cost. That was clearly apparent from taking the drug.
They didn't have to take a nap.
So I think that was a little bit of a problem. I think the other problem, the bigger problem, right? Because I'm fine with the drug. I'm fine. Okay. Yeah. All right. It was
cool.
It didn't cost you anything. And
they were certainly badass.
From a literary perspective, that's maybe a little bit problematic. But I think the other issue is I can buy the whole like kicking some ass, like the initial part where they were kicking ass. I was like, okay, I got it. They took a super drug and then they like freaked out on these dudes.
Yeah.
And kicked their asses. And then they found out some information.
Klingon ass.
But then they like had to fight a whole bunch more people. And that started to get a little, silly in my book. Now it didn't detract too much from the episode for me. It just kind of got, it was like simultaneously a little silly and a little boring because it was like, okay, you've already made your point. and Benga's all like in a bad space here.
Well, what you were saying about how there should be something like negative about it, they even implied that there was because she goes, do you ever not carry it? And he says, no. And then she goes, are you sure you want to do this again? And he's like, again, no.
Yeah.
And he's, but I'm not seeing a better choice. Yeah. So right there, they're setting it up like, now I guess you could say, they don't want to go to that mental state again. But like, it didn't land for me.
The implication is that you're supposed to be all like super fucked up at the end of this, but you're alive.
Have we seen them do this before?
Not that I remember.
And so they're just referring to some other incident that we don't know about.
They beat up like first it was like four or five Klingons and then she gave him a tip. Then she was like,
one of them smacked a Klingon like in his ears.
Yeah. And Benga did that.
Yeah. It was tight.
Yeah. So,
it was definitely cool. It was just a little unnecessary.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they beat up like four or five of them. And then she was like, they were doing the transponder thing. And then she was like, hold on, I'll watch while you do this. Yeah. And then she casually beats up like three more. And then they end it with like five more Klingons that they beat up. They just kept beating up Klingons. Yeah. One point it took two Klingons to hold her down. And I don't care who you are or what kind of drug you're taking. I think like two Klingons holding you
just from what we understand about Klingons, they're like, supposed to be super strong and super badass. Now maybe they are. We don't want to stereotype. They're not all like that, maybe, but still.
Well, okay, I'll get to that actually in a second. But like, I understand, like you get adrenaline, people can lift up houses and shit or whatever they say they can do. But there's a limit. I think.
I mean, they don't say houses. Just so you know, they say like cars.
Cars. Okay, a house would break if you tried to pick it up. If you didn't.
It might be one issue among many.
Well, Superman's always picking up some tall building, but it's like that building would break in half.
We're not talking about that.
We're not talking about that.
We're just talking about the green drug.
The green drug. So, anyways, it just seems like there were certain situations where, like, doesn't matter how much drug you can take, it's not. But I don't know. These were kind of chumpy Klingons because there was that one guy.
The coward guy who spilled his guts.
So this scene.
Is there a transponder on the ship? I will never. Deck 13.
So he bothers to say, I will never. And then like all he does is brandish his stick and he gives it away and he just hits him with the stick anyway. Like why would, it's almost more. He totally dishonored himself. That dude's not going to Stovall Corps unless he writes his shit.
I don't think most of them believe in Stovall Corps.
Yeah, Stovall Corps.
Stovall Corps.
Stovall Corps.
Smoko.
Stovall Corps. Hey, you Stovall Corps.
I'm on Smoko.
Hey, you Stovall Corps.
So leave me alone.
So it's almost worse that he even bothered to say, I will never, because he didn't even have any conviction about his cowardice. Yeah, yeah. Like, he should have at that point been like, I'm a coward, I accept it, I'm just gonna give you all the information. But to pretend that you, like, give a shit, and then all he has to do is swing a stick around and you give up. Klingon, you know, even your average Starfleet officer would take a beating for a while before giving up some serious information. That's something you would die, I would think, not to get too like into like, if I was a real Klingon. Like,
well, yeah.
Because obviously that's silly. But
it's typical military behavior.
But
you're making the no true Klingon fallacy.
What? Can you explain that to me?
It's a variation on the no true Scotsman fallacy.
Oh.
But it's, never mind. The people out there who will get it will get it. Not everybody will get it. Most, but the people who will get it will get it. Here's how I look at that particular scene. And again, my critique is more about sort of.
You sound like you said microteak.
Microteak.
I've got some microteak.
It's like microfiche, except
micro machines.
But for the 2020s. Micro machines. No, my critique is the length of it, and there's some unnecessary stuff. And you can do a test, right? You can do a test on whether something's necessary or unnecessary. Yes, I'm about to. I'm going to describe the test. And what that test is.
Well, describing is not doing.
You start removing things, you start removing components, and you're like, do I end up at the same place with the same results? And in this episode, they take the drug. They fight off a bunch of motherfuckers. They start fiddling with the transponder, right? Now, let's say they fiddle with the transponder, and then around the corner, some Klingons are down the hallway, or some bad dudes are down the hallway. That point, they run into the airlock, and then they're trapped in the airlock, and they're like, okay, now we're in the airlock, and we're all physically all fucked up from fighting, and we're in the airlock, and this is looking bad, and then the dudes are all banging on the door. That gets you to the exact same place, which is the place that leads to the very otherwise super awesome, excellent, in my view, ending to this part of the episode, which was, even though we've seen it before in other shows, the whole going into the Expanse, going out the airlock into space and then being rescued in the nick of time.
I like that too. I always wonder how much they like sci-fi in general bullshits about rules of space. Like, how would you pass out after 15 seconds? Would you last a minute? Like, I want to know the actual rules on that.
My understanding,
because they used to always show like when the airlock opens up, everyone gets sucked out, but that doesn't actually really happen.
So
like that,
there can be a section.
This is just a sci-fi thing. This is not a Star Trek.
You can get sucked out because the pressure has to equalize, and it equalizes in that way.
But it's not as intense as they show it.
Probably
not. That's what my understanding is, that yes, the pressure is to equalize, but it's not like insano like you see in movies.
But having read my fair share of Wikipedia, my understanding is that you actually do have about a minute or so in space, because while space is quote unquote cold, it's also a near vacuum, which means it's very insulating. And so
your shit actually boils.
Like in Total Recall, your eyeballs wouldn't bulge out like that.
No, exactly.
In Total Recall.
Your eyeballs wouldn't bulge out on Mars like that. That's an exaggeration. All the liquids in your body would start boiling, but they would be boiling because the vacuum had reduced the boiling point of the liquids in your body to such a low temperature. Yes, it's not great. And there would be permanent damage or at least serious damage the longer you're out there, but it is survivable up to some certain amount.
Yeah,
but
well,
if the Enterprise rescued your ass, you'd be
especially
okay.
If you can be beamed away.
And that was my question, is the time. I'm like wondering, like, I just want to know how long it's gonna take. Are they basing that off of anything? Like, I believe that you can last in space for a while, but is it really a minute? Is it 5 minutes? That's a big difference.
I think they toss a few astronauts out every now and then and just check it out.
And they like were in real life? Still on, on drugs.
Yeah, like on the internet, on the International Space Station.
They were on drugs.
You're in close quarters.
Every once in a while you toss someone out.
The dude over in the corner is just getting aggravating, playing his space lute all the time, and you're like, I can't stand that motherfucker.
It's like when
everyone teams up and is like, boom, out the airlock.
It's like when my man Bashir, when there was
our man Bashir.
when the super evil villain's plan was to like
flood the earth,
it was
going to release all the magma somehow so that the crust would shrink. And then the oceans wouldn't get bigger. It was that the crust was going to shrink. Yeah, the earth was going to shrink like a little balloon.
And so I'm wondering how much of that is actually based on something. Maybe most of it is false, but something must have gotten that idea from something.
Okay.
Dr. Seuss.
Yes. Now, I wouldn't necessarily put staying in a minute in outer space and shrinking the earth to make an island for all the rich people.
My only point is
different categories of thing.
My only point is I wasn't so much questioning that they could live in outer space for a few seconds, but it's just my question is how do they come up with these numbers? If it's just for drama,
right.
I guess. Or do they actually know something
I don't? I suspect that they do.
It's an estimation.
They have science advisors, like Dr. Erin McDonald is the science advisor for a lot of the modern Star Trek.
Right on.
She knows what the fuck she's talking about. Insofar, or at least to the degree that we can expect anybody to know what they're talking
about.
I don't think that Dr. Erin McDonald is pulling some sort of prank on all of Star Trek.
That's not what people in science typically do.
Yeah. Okay.
Dennis, last words.
Unless it's April Fool.
It ain't no April Fool's.
No.
I recommend we take another break and then we can conclude our discussion of this very fine season opener of Star Trek Strange New World Season 2. All right. We will be right back. Okay, we're back. Hey, everybody, how's it going?
Oh, I wanted to play the sound of some Klingon beat-em-ups.
I mean, you can play whatever sounds you like.
It's 12 seconds.
12 seconds?
Of Klingon beat-em-ups.
Klingons beating up stuff?
Being beaten up.
All right.
That was Klingons being beaten up.
Yeah, the fight scenes, yeah, the fight scenes were pretty good for the most part.
Yeah, totally. I was into them. Yeah.
I think again that whole scene is it's more. There's just a few components of it that I think are extra. The individual pieces that make up that extra all were great. Great choreography. Dr. Mbenge is a scary motherfucker when he wants to be.
Yeah,
and it's fascinating because he's a doctor, so
iron bonds everywhere.
You usually expect doctors to be a little less
And so is Nurse Chapel is a badass.
Too. She is. But he's also a very caring and soft spoken and emotional person. So it makes his capacity for violence that much more sort of terrifying.
Oh, when he gave that line, when the Klingon was like questioning his credentials, and he said, "Do you know that after the Battle of Chakana, there was so much blood in the air, the rain turned red?"
Yeah.
And I was like, when I saw that, I was like, damn, I hope they follow up on that, because that was like a fucked up throwaway line if that's what it was. But it wasn't, thank goodness. They followed it up, because I was like, you don't just say that and then like not come back to that. But they did. They were like, he's gotten really fucked up from this whole thing.
Yeah.
So understandably, like, because it put this, that must have been horrifying. And like, if they had just moved on from that, I would have been annoyed. But like, they made it part of the plot, which is cool.
It was also more poetic than where I thought they were going when he started saying that line. He was like, there was so much blood in the air.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were going to say something like, we all started inhaling blood and coughing. It was real gross.
It was super gross.
It was like, it was like blood asthma.
No, it was raining blood.
You know, like, there's Ed Asner, and then there's blood asthma.
Mm.
They're not related, by the way.
Medical personnel always see the worst part of war.
That's a good point.
Because they're treating the wounded.
Yeah.
On both sides.
And so, yeah.
Because the implication here was Mbenga, he was treating
all their scene all the troops. Is the damage.
So the only reference to this, his whole thing on the war before that, was when Lon said half the town got sick from ion exposure, including Oriana's parents. And Mbenga said, ion radiation is not naturally occurring from dilithium, but it can be created by photon torpedoes. Hmm. And then Spock's like, all surprised, is like, that's correct. At first, it sounded like that was like a line strictly to inform the audience of like the deal of like what was going on, like trying to tell them the plot. But it kind of was. But it was also convenient because it served a second point of sort of giving us a bit of Mbenga's past. Once again, it's sort of like all weaved together. So it was, I thought that was good because it let the audience know what they needed to know. But it also had a purpose, like as part of the plot, to do that. So
it's good. It's good Star Trek.
It was good exposition, I guess you could say.
This is good exposition. Star Trek.
It's good Star Trek. I liked it. I was into
very,
it.
Very good.
So the deal is the dilithium wasn't poisoning everyone, but they were creating photon torpedoes, which was
I think what we're meant to understand is that they goofed up and like accidentally set off a photon torpedo because they're right. Putting together the ship down there.
Right.
And they're, as you noted, they are chumpy. This is a chumpy extremist organization, which is another thing I like, because oftentimes we do get the oversimplified, hyper-competent bad guys. And that can be fun for certain types of stories, but it is nice to see this idea that you've got kind of some like goofy guys who are, but they're not the only people involved in this. Presumably, this Broken Circle thing I think is going to be referenced again throughout the season.
I don't think they mentioned the Klingon War and Mbenga and Chapel's involvement prior to that. I can't quite recall.
There might have been some references to it or assumptions, just because everybody was involved in the war in some fashion. Yeah. If they were recently in Star Trek,
that mine was
Star Trek.
That mine was awesome though, because they built this thing that must have been like 50 stories high.
Yeah.
At first, it didn't look that big, but then you saw little ships flying by. It's like, oh, it's so far away, it looks small.
Yeah.
Like, and so I guess it's some kind of mining facility / they probably live in there and they have an easy way to like transport. That was pretty cool. I was like, the idea that you mine so much that you have to start building a structure inside of where you just mined. That's what dwarves would do, man.
Those rock formations, like the sort of pinnacle rock formations. It was like a magic card.
I don't know how that happens,
but that was pretty awesome. Yeah. Unless the gravity is such that when you mine too much, it breaks off and starts floating into the space
and they call it a mine.
Yeah, speaking of the dwarves and their mining.
The dwarves of Moria.
Absolutely.
So
I prefer to speak of them.
The production design on Strange New Worlds has always been great. Season one was really, really good. They have really stepped things up even further this year. And I just couldn't believe some of the stuff I was seeing.
B'Elanna's on
it. I remember.
B'Elanna's not.
I remember my wife walked by and she's like, "What the hell is this?" She's like, "What's this? It looks so good."
Yeah.
I was like, "Yeah, it's because like they're sitting at the campfire
really bad, yeah.
and there's stuff in the background and then the mines and like mines. Oh my god, I mean, it's, all of this world building on this mm-hmm. world blew my mind. And it brought to mind
the mind blew your mind.
And it brought to mind.
And they call it a mind.
A mind.
When we discussed Picard season 3,
just letting you know I'm coming on duty,
which we enjoyed.
I don't remember.
We enjoyed Star Trek Picard season 3. We are not Picard haters. We are Picard enjoyers. But we did comment how could you hate the quotey seedy underworld of Metallus 3 seemed to be like one little alleyway in
right.
And it was almost TNG-ish or Deep Space Nine-ish in that sense. It's like you've got this one set you're shooting kind of from a few different angles. It was very Star Trek-y, but it wasn't very like lived in and real. This shit looked fucking real. This camp, this mining stuff, there were so many people and so many things going on.
Yeah.
Obviously a lot of it was all, you know, all CGI and stuff, but it was just amazing to look at, and you felt lived in. I really enjoyed how much effort has been put into this and how just well crafted everything is, like all down to like the littlest details. To see it on TV is fucking awesome. That's like some awesome like Star Trek in this like awesome world, alien world.
On the surface during the day, it seems like they were all partying. That seems like it'd be a fun place to party, you know, just like, you know, out in the open. The weather seemed moderate.
Some crazy ass trees, some like alien ass trees.
Yeah. Crazy shit, you know. Yeah, some
had
floating
some rings.
Rocks.
Did you see the rings like in the sky? On the background, it was badass. Because there's like a ring around the planet. So it like there was the rings, and then there was like some shadows from the rings, which was another pretty excellent
detail. The shadows from the rings.
But it's not just the physical space, it's the character development, the way the characters interact.
May your blood scream.
And navigate through this world they find themselves in, I thought was very, very fun to watch. Especially La'an.
I can believe that La'an could outdrink a Klingon.
I could believe that.
Oh yeah.
So the whole ship was getting inspected, and there was that one guy.
They're getting upgrades and shit.
They're getting upgrades.
Refits.
There was that one guy who was all talking about how she reversed the pitch in
the yaw.
I like that guy.
Yeah,
I like that guy too.
I like that guy.
That was a good little scene.
That was good representation for the sort of
pitch and yaw
guy could do that job.
Portly pedantic fella.
Yeah.
So from IT.
So the pitch
is like nice, but you know, he takes
like,
his shit
seriously. It's like when you set your what was the there was a Nintendo controller where you could like change up
this Nintendo 64
controller. It was 64. You could change up like how you wanted it to be. Like you could set it one way, you could set it the other way, whichever way was comfortable for you. It's like that.
Pitch and yaw.
Right. Yeah. So the pitch is when the nose or tail going up or down. That's the pitch.
Right.
The yaw is side to side.
Yeah, it's sliding on the side.
The roll is like the clockwise spinning motion.
Yeah. The wings wiggling up and down.
So she reversed it, which apparently makes it quicker.
She flipping nipping yet wet yet.
She would say that again. She flipping a whipping a nip. You said flipping a whipping a nip.
Is she flipping nipping yet yet?
Yeah, that's what you said.
Yeah.
That was a weird thing you said.
Yeah.
She being the helm.
Yeah.
My what?
The bridge officer.
Your what?
So, part of the helm.
My what?
I don't see how flipping it would make it faster, but I do see how it could make it like easier to control because...
Maybe she's got backwards hands.
Do you think this goes back way to like, Jesse, what you were saying about Nintendo games, like where you press down to go up and up to go down in those flying games?
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, I hear that the kids... Up goes up. When you're playing a flying game or a first-person game,
between myself and my son.
If you want to look up, you press up, and you want to look down, you press down. And like, I can't. I've tried it. I can't do it. Up goes down when you're a first person shooter, and down goes up to me. And I can't get used to the new way of doing.
That's
it.
That's how airplanes go.
It's so, because our brains are ossified. We have ossified brains.
So she probably was going old school, where down is up, and the Starfleet probably wants up to be up, and she's like, that's fucked up.
Yeah,
I was thinking exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't see how
the entire thought process was identical in my mind.
Not even one. I don't, but I don't see how it would make it quicker unless you count like correcting mistakes quicker.
Well, some people,
or
it's
not
just
having to correct mistakes.
That's what makes sense to them intuitively. And then that would make it more efficient and quicker.
When I say quicker, it sounds like there's less movement happening. It's quicker because you can press the button more quickly. I could see how.
Yes, there's more quick reaction time.
Yeah, but
I think it's okay to refer to something if it's quicker, if it's more intuitive.
No, because if the difference is what direction it goes, that what would make it quicker is if you adjusted it to a position that your hand reaches.
You have to send the input to your hand and then pick the thing. And so if it's the more intuitive thing that your brain doesn't wrestle with it, it's going to make pick the right direction more quickly.
Now you're being pedantic because like...
I think I'm being pedantic. I think I'm just... This is
no,
describing
to
reality.
Me, to me, it's like if you can't adjust the steering wheel, that's less quick than if I can adjust the steering wheel because I can bring it closer and I can make it more comfortable. But as far as what goes right and what goes left, eventually your brain will get used to whatever control system is put in place.
Right.
And someone who's a pro like Ortega's, like, she could do whatever. Okay, yeah. I mean, my point is...
That last argument I do buy, that a pro should be able to handle whatever.
Like, I could see what would make it quicker is if, like, you had to move the joystick less to make it move more. You know what I'm saying? If it was more sensitive. That would make it quicker, because if you move it just an iota, it goes a mile.
It we don't know how that thing controls. It might be a sensitive control of the helm on a
starship. But my point is that I would buy it if she said... I'm making it quicker by making it more sensitive to my touch. That would make it quicker. Yeah, yeah. But reversing the controls would not make it quicker in my head. That's my point. You can disagree.
Right.
I'm surprised I have not read about this controversy on the internet yet.
Well,
we might have to introduce it to the internet.
Yeah, I think we do. The pitch and yaw, reverse controls. I can see the preference, but I don't see the quickness.
Yaw control.
You know where to find us on the internet. At It's Got Star Trek just about everywhere.
It's got yaw. Yaw control.
Yes. Oh yeah. No. So, production design is super amazing. I'm presuming they're going to keep that up. I'm glad they've got the talent, the investment. I don't know exactly what the difference is. I've heard some people argue that the salaries on Picard season 3 were really high. That's why it sort of limited,
veteran actors,
you know, and plus they had to pay a lot to rebuild the certain sets and stuff like that. So, okay. It's like, that's an expensive show. So maybe they had to constrain some of their stuff. I can buy into that. This was just really, really great. Really cozy to settle into this.
Mm-hmm.
And not only did we get to meet back up with La'an, we see the girl that she was helping, who is played by the sister of the boy who played the leader guy in that Lift Us Up Where Suffering Cannot Reach.
Yeah, that's right.
I forget. I think his name was Ian Ho. Her name is Emma Ho.
Mm-hmm.
They both played. They play brother and sister, and they are brother and sister. And they played brother and sister in season 6 of The Expanse.
Mm.
That's right.
And they're both really fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
I heard them on the Ty and That Guy podcast, which is a podcast with Ty Frank, who is one of the writers of The Expanse, and Wes Chatham, who is. The scary monster guy on The Expanse.
Yeah, right. The guy from Baltimore.
Oh no, I didn't bust that guy up. That guy could.
Yeah,
he looks
Amos.
Like it looks like he could bust me up with his beautiful looks.
Yeah, he has great eyes. That's a fantastic podcast. And they don't only talk about The Expanse, by the way. They talk about all sorts of stuff. But they had those actors on and interviewed them. And they mentioned working on Star Trek Strange New Worlds and how much fun they had doing it. So it sounds like it was a good time for them on the set. I like those. That's the type of continuity I like.
Continuity?
Yes, the type of continuity that I like.
Continuity.
No, okay.
Continuity?
I just never heard anyone. I've never heard anyone say
continuity.
I've never heard.
It's how it's spelled.
I've never heard anyone say continuity.
You've
before.
Heard me say it, and you've criticized me for saying it that way.
No one other
this
than
is
you.
A recurring thing.
Maybe I'm doing one of those things where I pronounce things in a funny way, and then people are like, "That's aggravating," but now it's stuck in my head, and now I'm psychosocially attached to you, and now I will give you money. Oh. Did you think of that, Dan?
I didn't.
It worked for William Shatner.
You can monetize anything.
You can monetize speaking weird.
Capitalism.
You just talk a little weird, and people are all like, "Whoa, I want to give that person money."
Yeah.
Speaking,
shuffle the money right into their little belly sack.
Speaking of reoccurring things, let's just get this out of the way.
If she's your only shot at fighting this, I have to try. Just hang in there, number one. That's an order.
Totally okay with that.
Okay.
All right. Okay, Cole, right.
Because he was being, I didn't catch it. He was being cute.
This is Dan's that's an order critique.
Yeah, Dan likes to, anytime the term that's an order comes up in any episode of Star Trek, Dan applies a rubric to determine to what degree it is an a lame cliche or a totally reasonable thing for the character to say at that time.
So just to play one more time, in case you missed it.
If she's your only shot at fighting this, I have to try. Just hang in there, number one. That's an order.
Two thumbs up because he was being cute. He was being cute. He knew he was being cute, and he knew he was being lovey because he loves her, and it's adorable that they love each other, and like, you know.
So you're saying, and it's because he's just having fun.
He's just having fun.
As opposed to, what if they followed this up and he came to visit her? and he found out that she was not in fact hanging in there.
Oh, and then
maybe she just pled guilty or something.
And then
he was like, no, that was an order. And then so he charges her with insubordination. She gets more years added onto her punishment.
That would add an extra thumb up because like that would blow my mind. I would be like, yeah, that's exactly what's supposed to happen.
Man, Captain Pike is a stickler for the roles.
But it's like not
that
like
that doesn't sound like Captain Pike.
No, it doesn't.
Because it's not like it's lame when they're like, you know, well, you save yourself and not me. That's an order. It's like,
I hear you. I hear where you're going. I hear where you're going with that.
Pike out.
Doesn't it sound like he's saying pike out?
Pike out.
I don't know what that means. Oh, pike out.
It sounds like pike out. Sounds like pie gal, which is a poker.
That sounds delicious.
Which is a poker game.
Pie gal is a poker game?
It's type of poker.
I thought it sounds like a kind of pie.
I thought pike out was sort of like one of those verbs where you're all like, I'm going to go to the concert and pike out.
No, pie gal.
I'm going to...
Yeah.
No, he didn't drink his gummy bear.
If those motherfuckers mess with me at the mall again, I'm going to pike out on them.
He didn't drink his gummy berry juice like Mbenga and Chapel did, so no.
Yeah, gummy berry juice. Yeah.
Bouncing here and there and everywhere.
But the humans, when they drink
it's the Star Trek podcast.
But when the humans drink it, they pike out, as you've ever seen. No, pie gal. It's different, not pike out.
I'm not familiar with that particular mode of poker.
Wow. It sounds like you made it up.
I didn't.
No, I believe.
Are you fit for duty now?
I'm skeptical.
Just letting you know I'm coming on duty.
You can believe.
Are you fit for duty now? Are you fit for duty now? Are you fit for duty now?
I'm not fit for duty. Just letting you know I'm coming on duty.
Duty. That's another recurring segment is every time they say duty.
That's a good one.
Are you fit for duty now?
Just letting you know I'm coming on duty.
Are you fit for duty now?
Yeah.
So, although we didn't get to see much of Pike and Una because of that other thing, it was great to see.
I was entertained. I almost like, I wasn't, I was never at like, when is Pike and Una going to come back? I never had that in my head.
This was a Spock story. Yeah, it was a great Spock-centric story.
And a Nurse Chapel.
And it wasn't until afterwards when I was like, oh, wait a minute, there was no Pike or Una. Then that doesn't speak poorly of Pike and Una. It speaks highly of like, the rest of the show.
I think more to the point. They give all the characters something to do, including Jenna Mitchell. They give her more to do. Mm-hmm. She's more involved. More displays of Uhura's capacity at linguistics and sort of code breaking. I love seeing all that because that's why she's there. That's one of the talents, one of the many talents, but that's sort of like the key talent that she brings to the whole thing. I always love when the characters are being used for what they're good for, right? And of course, now we have this new character of Commander Pellia and all sorts of fun stuff. We can look forward to learning about her. Chapel and Mbenga, of course, we discussed.
We learned there's a new
Laan is a badass.
There's a new dialect of Klingon, Kak-ug.
I don't think you're pronouncing
what?
That properly.
Kak-ugie? What?
I don't think that you're pronouncing that properly.
Kak-ug. Duk-tog.
See, you're the guy who records all these sound clips, and you conveniently did not record the pronunciation of that sound clip.
You're right.
You just want to keep playing. You just keep wanting to say that the dialect is called cock-tug.
I didn't say cock-tug.
That's what I heard. I heard you saying that this dialect is called cock-tug.
Joel!
But you don't have the recording of them saying it, so we can't.
We have a recording of him.
We would have to go anyway. Okay. Whatever it's called, it's fine.
Kajitar is on the edge of Klingon space.
I like the name Kajitar because it makes me think of being agitated. Doesn't it evoke the idea of being agitated?
I hadn't thought of that before.
Oh, fuck, we gotta go to Kajitar? Because I'm gonna get all agitated because we're on, like, Kajitar.
I hadn't even thought about that, but now I shall.
It's like being agitated by a cat.
Kajitar is on the edge of Klingon space.
Cat-sitar?
Kajik.
Is that like a Vulcan lyre? It's a cat sitar.
Cat sitar. All right. Any other cool points about this?
Space junk.
I think, you know, like we were going through the characters, I guess, but they all did something. They all got stuff to do, and that was great. It's fun ensemble stuff. Even though it did center Spock was the A story. It was like Spock being put in a position that he has to wrestle with his emotions and has to make a decision to where he thinks he's going to kill the person that he's in love with, or at least is very fond of. Then the Mbenga and Chapel stuff, that was good, but I still place that kind of in a B story format. And then La'an, you know, we only get little bits and pieces of her, but it's great.
It's pretty cool.
And it's fun that she's ready to come back because she's accomplished finding the whole parents thing.
I found another beat that I can for if you put together a Star Trek.
So you're putting
EDM.
Together now. You don't.
Well, I'm not actually doing it.
You never end up actually doing it, even though you have the capacity to do it. You have
so
the
much
skill
effort.
Set to do that.
So much effort.
That's because you're a perfectionist, man.
I should. You know, the ironic thing is, it'd probably be better if I put like less thought into it. Honestly, I'm not just because that's honestly like people always talk about like, yeah, I wrote that hit song in like an afternoon in an hour. You know,
sometimes with music you need to think less.
Yeah. That Daft Punk song, it's like right about now. The funks. I think
that's
it's that
not
one.
Daft Punk.
Oh, wait, no. I'm sorry. You're right. No, not
Around
not
the World.
Around the World. Yeah, sorry. Around or which one? It was either world. Around the World or Funk Soul Brother, but one of those was basically like a throwaway track, I think. I think I'm getting that story right. But like it ended up being really famous. But they like just kind of made it up in the studio because they need to fill up time.
Okay, can we get
who
to
did
the,
Funk Soul Brother? Who's that?
Just click the buttons. You should click the buttons that make the sounds.
Fat Boy
Slim. Fat Boy Slim.
Okay,
click the buttons.
So here's the Mbenga beat that I think I can that you can layer over.
There's a beacon in the helmet. 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 And then how did you get in the back?
That last part needs some workshopping. But there's a
beacon in the helmet.
There's a beacon in the helmet. In the helmet.
And I'm
helmet.
Ready to dance.
There's a beacon in the helmet.
There's a beacon in the helmet.
There's a beacon in the helmet.
And all right, audience. And I can't shake it off.
People in the audience.
I ain't got no panties on.
Why don't you grab that, take that, mix it into some wild beat, send it to us. We'll play it on the internet.
We'll play it on the internet.
Yeah.
Okay,
well, we'll play it on the show, and then that'll be on the internet.
We're playing it on the internet.
And then anyone on the internet will have access to it.
Anyone.
Now, of course, you're on the internet, because so you could just do it yourself. But
Why would
let's,
you
come
do
on,
it?
Come on, let's be team players here. Yeah. Let's be team players. Please do work for us. We're looking to Dan, because we're like, Jesse and I are like, all right, time's,
we're done.
No, so,
time is here, but Dan looks like he's got more buttons to push.
There's a couple more.
Metaphorical and physical.
When
if you catch my meaning.
When the Klingon captain, this whole part.
You drink blood wine.
You're no typical Vulcan.
So that scene was interesting because essentially
he came off very TOS.
It essentially distilled down into this. The Klingon captain says
he was wearing lots of gold.
He said, This is how it got resolved. He goes, you were gonna get us. Spock says, no, we weren't. And then he goes, you're trying to pretend like you didn't lose to us. And then Spock goes, we got the ship, and the guy's like, yeah, but you knew you were going to lose. And Spock says, you didn't even see us.
The Klingon was bullshit.
You didn't even see us. We could have killed you without you knowing. And then the Klingon goes, yeah, well, I don't know about that. And then Spock says, I'm telling the truth. And then the Klingon says, come get drunk with me and we'll call it even. And Spock says, okay.
Right, right.
Up until the end, the whole conversation just sounded like when you're talking to somebody who's like anti-vax. Like, you're trying to have like a nice,
no, we weren't.
Polite conversation. And it's like, this is ridiculous. The only problem is those conversations tended not to end in like, okay, let's just have fun. Let's just drink some beer.
Well, so the whole time
the Klingon guy was totally full of shit. Like,
yeah,
you know,
he knew he was full of shit.
Yeah, and he knew it, and he was just being a Klingon and playing it off.
Yeah, fucking around. They like fucking around.
Yeah.
So do you think his out was like, it wasn't like, come drink with me, we'll call it even. You think the whole time he was looking for an out, and then he was just like, if I say we'll drink, that'll be an honorable way for me to back down from this argument.
And I think he did notice that Spock was not your typical Vulcan, and he was going to investigate.
Yeah.
What's going on?
He was like, why does this Vulcan look like he's crying?
This guy's about to start crying.
That's the only thing that does make sense, because otherwise they resolved a dispute by simply saying, let's get drunk. You know, and
but
that was...
I like it because it's a sort of a TOS style ending.
It
it's
is,
like sort
yeah.
of slightly abrupt, but you can buy it based on the nature of the characters involved.
This is how a Vulcan who is in Starfleet behaves as opposed to just a Vulcan and the Vulcan, you know.
Whatever. And he's half human. And he's half human. And he's our boy. He's our boy Spock. Steve Spock.
He's our guy.
Good old Steve Spock. He's
everybody's buddy.
First name Steve, last name Spock.
Stevie, A. Steve.
All right, Dan, any final clips or buttons or anything you want to push?
The other thing I want to point out.
I knew
there was something else.
The other thing that is very important I point out, because you guys got on my case before about this.
Okay.
This whole thing.
Got your case.
When they're talking about Spock having his thing. Right, like when he says it, the thing that he has when he says it, you mean the warp me? Yeah,
thing.
Uhura says,
hit it.
That's like something like she hit knew it. Someone said that, and someone
else. Yeah, that's what Pike says.
Hit it.
Yeah, that's what Pike said. Sorry, there was another one that someone else.
Zoom.
Yeah, Zoom was the thing that somebody else said. I don't remember.
Nobody said she. She was referring to a previous.
That's
captain
what I mean. Yeah, a previous.
But
captain,
we don't know who that.
Right.
Was.
So the previous cat. So.
And do you know what Captain Picard said?
Yes, engage.
Okay, I'm just making sure.
Well, so Pike hit says it. Hit it. So we learn that someone else Zoom. Says.
Do you remember what Burnham says?
And then. Ortega said, I see you looking at your watch, and I'll finish.
I got a notification on my watch about, it says $25,000 in Bitcoin could be yours.
Oh, neat.
Oh, no.
Neat.
Did you know that?
That's so easy.
Did you know you just have it? They just give you Bitcoin.
Yeah, apparently. So then.
That's my Bitcoin.
So then Ortega, she's workshopping.
Vamos.
Right? I like that. Yeah.
Zoom.
This is the one I want to focus on.
But
Zoom.
You could use better
Spanish. Wait. This is the one I want to focus on.
Zoom.
You know why I want to focus on?
Zoom.
Do you think this is a paid promotion for Zoom by Zoom Inc.?
No, because
okay.
If you'll recall, in episode 181 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast,
okay.
Where we covered Star Trek Picard season 3, episode 10, The Last Generation,
okay.
When Seven is about to make the ship go fast,
uh-huh.
Raffi goes, on your command, Captain, engage, make it so, take her out. There's a long history of this, your first official act of command. So they're doing that meta thing again. But then Jack Crusher says, writing the opening line to your legacy. So then what'll it be? All right. And so they're both referencing the same thing. At the time, I said I had some lines. I had some warp ideas.
All right. Yeah.
One of mine.
You had some warp ideas.
One of mine was, let's get the zap out of here.
I do recall that.
That was one of my warp lines. That. You guys gave me shit for it.
And then it was a little bit verbose.
It was
and
silly.
Then I said, I'm feeling warpy. You also didn't like that one either.
Well, that's not a command.
And it made me uncomfortable.
You can't sit in the cap. You sit down in the captain's chair and you say to everybody on the bridge, hey guys, I'm feeling warpy.
It makes me feel like you got something.
They're going to be like, okay, well, we're going to call the doctor.
Something flappy is happening. There's something sort of flappiness.
Okay, so this one.
Zoom.
My suggestion was actually.
Zoom. Zoom. Zoom.
I said it should
zoom, zoom, zoom.
Okay. I do remember you said it should
I said zoom, zoom, zoom. As in like that zoom, zoom, zoom.
Yeah.
Capo, you know.
Yeah.
Zoom, 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 which is us on that car. And you guys were all just like fell out of your chairs. You're like, oh my God, Dan. How could you be so dumb? You were calling Star Trek dumb. When you called me dumb, you were calling Star Trek dumb.
I mean, we must.
I think.
You know, we must note. That there is some qualitative difference between Zoom and Zoom, Zoom, Zoom.
Get out of here. Get out of the city.
Because one is sort of a pithy, if slightly bizarre choice, and the other just makes you sound like a lunatic. Especially if you have to say capoeira after.
Well, no, that was just to get people to know the reference.
Zoom, 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 capoeira.
Well, then you can start doing capoeira, right, when you're doing it. Yeah,
you can actually have a Brazilian... captain who's doing some capoeira on the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Could be. All right. I think
I have faith in you. I have faith in you.
I think we've gotten through all our business this week.
What he said?
I have faith in you.
That's what I thought of.
Yeah.
When he said, I have faith in you to Una.
Cool.
I thought of that song.
I didn't.
Well.
Patrick's had enough. Patrick's like, I've had enough. Jesse, have you had enough too?
No,
just ready to go. Yes, okay. We're done, I think, for this week. Next week
it was pretty good, man.
Part one of our discussion of Star Trek III: The Search for Spock. Yeah. Check it out.
Stay tuned, baby.
The week after that, part two of Star Trek III: The Search for Spock. And then after that,
some extra.
We'll spit out some reviews of episodes 2 and 3 of the season, and then
episode
4 will be on its normal schedule, and then we'll continue on like that. And then we'll.
Never, oh no, you don't.
We'll never take vacation ever again in our lives.
Probably not.
Don't worry. Right. With that, we do wish you a very lovely and a very happy and a very fulfilling week. And
so be it.
Until the next time we chat, we will talk to you then. Bye bye.
Another?
Please.
To the Vulcan who acts nothing like a Vulcan.